You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Take one. Knock, knock.
Who'd ask?
We're Steven and Dana, and we can't believe you found our fucking podcast.
We're so glad you're listening to it. We would never listen to it.
I don't even want to listen to it to edit it.
I don't even want to wake up in the morning.
We're Steven and Dana, and we're in the room.
This is one of those experiences that lives up to 12-year-old Broadway dreams.
I remember the last time we spoke.
Hi, Dana.
Oh, hey. hey.
Queen.
How are you?
Parched, I'm sure.
It's a Sunday. No, it's a Saturday.
No, it's...
Wait, it's a Sunday.
It's a Sunday.
It's the Lord's Day. It's the day I cook a lot.
I had bagels and lox this morning.
I heard. How were those lox?
With capers...
What else? I went to Dallas Barbecue recently.
Oh,
that was Monday.
Jealous.
Ah! What is your Dallas Barbecue? Oh, I know what your Dallas Barbecue order
yeah,
is.
Yeah, you do.
He gets a rack of ribs.
Yeah.
And then you have to watch him eat it.
That's the hard part.
That's the hard part. It looks
that's
like he's eating a bloody
That's
body.
Why they give you a cupcake at the end.
They don't do cupcakes no more.
Really?
What did we get? I can't remember. It was like just chocolate Hershey Kisses.
Which it's going downhill.
I know. But I get the piña colada raspberry with the extra shot.
Mm-hmm.
And then the half chicken, all dark meat, baked potato. That's about it. That's my normal order. Riveting.
Can I ask our guest, Will Blum of Broadway's Beetlejuice, what he orders at Dallas Barbecue?
Yes.
This might be controversial. I don't like Dallas Barbecue.
You're not into it.
No, I'm...
It's too trashy.
I'm from Tennessee, and I'm a very big barbecue connoisseur, so if I'm going to go... Surprisingly, my favorite barbecue in New York City...
Yeah.
There's a Best Yet Market on 116th that has a barbecue counter. Best pulled pork in New York City.
Really?
Best brisket in New York City. It is so good. Go. Actually, don't go, because...
I will go.
The secret's out.
Where is it again? Where is it?
116th and Adam Clayton Powell, maybe?
ICP.
Yeah.
It's great.
That
very
checks
good.
Out. That checks out.
I mean, Dallas Barbecue is you go for the experience. It's like going to Chuck E. Cheese. You know what I mean? It's like a different, you know, you're going for
like, you got a table
full.
Of 34? Yeah, right this way.
We went
like,
to Applebee's the other day. You go to Applebee's for the experience. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The
food
it's
is
going to
taste exactly the same
You know
every
exactly
time.
What you're going to get.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to be said for that.
It's like good enough. It's like
I'm not trash talking Dallas BBQ. It's just like, I can't remember.
I'm from Wisconsin. What do I know about barbecue? Anything with salt on it is good.
Yeah.
When I put
took
a sauce.
John to Dallas Barbecue for the first time, we walked in, he was like, if we were in Cheyenne, Wyoming, this would be like where you went to celebrate.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 For sure. It is.
It's where we go to celebrate.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I have birthday parties at Dallas Barbecue.
I used to go after every Broadway flea market.
Oh my God.
After working all day, I'm like, I just want to sit down and eat a ton of meat.
It's honestly, where I go after the Pride Parade. Like, after you're done, you walk your ass back up to 42nd or the one in Chelsea, whichever's closest.
So, after that Broad City episode, I want to try their chicken tenders because I love chicken tenders. That's like my...
Yeah, what's not to like?
But
what's your sauce?
honey mustard. You're like a really good, you know. Oh, Charlie's honey mustard. If anybody remembers a Charlie's. Let's see. Ooh. Yes.
I guess I'm done with what I'm doing, but then let's go to Tuesday night when I saw Beetlejuice on Broadway at the Winter Garden. It was my first time Beetlejuice, and I'm a longtime fan of the actual movie. It's one of my top 10 favorite movies of all time.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. And so I was very excited to see Beetlejuice with my friend Andrew Hollenbeck, and I thought I was going to see Leslie Kritzer that night. Because I know she's in it. I'm a fan. And Alex Brightman. You were on for Beetlejuice, and I didn't know you yet. And then...
I think Kim would have been on.
Yes.
Kim Sava.
Sava was on the Leslie.
For Leslie,
The Catherine O'Hara role, Delia.
Yeah.
And I am going to fangirl right now so hard. So just brace yourself.
Start sweating.
Buckle in. I want to start with the show. I thought it was what Beetlejuice on Broadway should have been.
Right?
I thought it was so much fun from the moment walking in. And I'm not just blowing smoke up your ass.
No. I'm a fangirl of the show as well.
I was like, Stephen, this guy was on tonight. He was like, oh my God, I know him. I'm like, can we make a conversation happen immediately? Okay. So Beetlejuice, you walk in. I mean, I hope there's no spoilers here, but you know, there's music playing and
brilliant.
They set the
Alex
tone of we're gonna have fun.
Yeah.
It's like waiting in line for a ride. It's very immersed and very, it keeps you interested for 15 minutes while you're waiting for curtain.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Super duper. Loved just the opening. And that's even before anything happens. I thought the direction was superb. I thought you were insane. Like,
you
are so good.
Thank
you. You're so talented. And that role has to be so fun to do, but also so hard to do. It's so detail-oriented. And I thought, I've been telling everyone who will listen to me how Shakespearean it came off. Because it's so...
Oh my goodness.
It's so intense. Like, the timing. Like, there are things in it, of your character especially, where it's the physical comedy is so great, but also the timing of your delivery sounds kind of improv'd in some ways, and which is what it's supposed to sound like, right? So I was appreciative of all the work that everyone is doing. It's at 100%. The look of it is 100%. I loved it so much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I want to ask, like, how you even began to learn it. I mean, as the understudy.
Right.
Far less rehearsal.
Well, in a way, I mean, I was with them. I wasn't with them in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
I joined when they started Broadway rehearsals. And I was in the room from day one of Broadway rehearsals because they knew it was such a big role that even though I wouldn't be rehearsing, that I could be there and watch. And and thank God, because when I went in, I just remember the first couple weeks just looking at it and just being like, what the fuck am I supposed to do? You know, like, it was so, there's so many moving parts.
Yeah.
And it's like great Alex Timbers style where there's so many tiny little details one after the other that if you mess up one, it kind of discredits the ones that follow. And so I knew that there would have to be a ton of detail work. And unfortunately, fortunately, like, that's what I love doing. I'm a Virgo. I'm a perfectionist. I love that kind of detail work and that kind of specific work. And I do coachings, and that's absolutely just the only thing that I work on.
Yeah.
So it went pretty fast. Because I try and make sure that I can step in even in rehearsals if something happens. So I tried to get sort of a bare sketch of it, and then started adding in the details. But the other thing that comes to, I mean, you saw Tuesday, which would have been my fifth performance of Beetlejuice, and
oh my God, like, stop it.
Well, Jesus
right
Christ.
Now.
But here, this is why, though. I had 8 months of watching and working, and I had plenty of understudy rehearsals and a put in and all these things, you know, and so I just had so much time to prepare, that's why it is so detailed, and why, you know, because I spent a lot of time waiting, and the other part of it is, you know, main thing with, you know, understudy tip is, like, steal the gold, you know what I mean? Like, Alex Brightman is a brilliant, brilliant comedian, and I was his alternate in School of Rock, and so I already knew, the things that make him interesting and unique that do not work for me. And there's tons of stuff where he can be much more at ease in general. And it works absolutely for what he's doing and sort of more deadpan delivery where I know my face is a little kind of clowny, expressive. And so me doing something at ease looks like I'm lazy, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So there's absolutely things that he's done, and he's such an incredible improv guy that he'll change things up all the time. He has hundreds of good choices that he's made in the show, and I've been able to say, oh, I like that one, and I like this one from that day, and this and this and this, and I put together my own recipe of a lot of Alex Brightman choices, you know what I mean? But specifically ones that I enjoy, and then the things that I know don't work for me are things that I'll have different ideas about. Of course I throw that, you know, but so much of it is, not to say I'm a complete copycat, but it is my job to make sure that I'm giving the same show that the director intended, and for me to go in and say, oh, well, this is how I'm going to interpret it, and this is how, you know, absolutely, you know, sort of destroys anything that Alex Timbers might have tried to create.
And it's the title
with it, so.
Character. Yeah. You know, it's absolutely. Evan Hansen. Yeah. It is Annie. You know? So, like, God bless anyone who's coming in after Ben Platt in Dear Evan Hansen. Exactly. It's like, you have to cry through the entire thing. Good luck.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and that's... I mean, luckily, my lot in life, in a way, has been sort of to either replace or understudy sort of impossible parts, and because that's what every, you know, I
hope
get
you're
the
a billionaire
junk
because I, you know, like, seriously, that is like the most terrifying thing I could ever imagine
it's
doing.
I mean, for me, it's fun, and it's always a thing where people are like, oh, you just made it your own so much, and I'm like, I don't know what that, you know what I mean?
Are you a monkey see, monkey do?
I'm very good at, yes, I mean, I of course, I think I learned how to sing by emulating Anthony Rapp and Norbert Leo Butts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like,
my voice will do. Exactly. I can, I'm definitely much better at that sort of thing. But yeah. Wait, what were we talking about?
What a wild ride.
Yeah, it's been,
So that was your fifth performance, is kind of where we started.
Yeah, and the first one is only, like 3 weeks ago. He didn't call out for literally 7 months of performances. Like, he made it to show 200 before calling out.
That's amazing.
Incredible.
Incredible.
He is an amazing captain of our ship. Like, you know, style trickles down, and he's just such a wonderful leader.
And what a gift you are. I mean, to be the understudy for him.
Yeah.
What a gift, because I couldn't believe, I was like, if this is the understudy, like,
very
come
sweet.
On. Like, you were incredible.
Thank you.
You give me goosies.
Thank you.
I'm full of goosies. And my friend Drew says, oh my God, tell him that he was incredible. I was like, yeah, we know.
Very
we
sweet.
Know.
Very
so,
sweet.
Okay. I haven't seen you yet because I suck, but I will.
It's okay. It's okay.
I just lucked out.
You just lucked out.
Well, and we tried to get you in on Wednesday. We're just selling really well. Like, there was apparently, like, the rush line today was down the block.
Yeah.
And, like,
and it's thrilling when the audience, you can tell the audience is also on the same page and loving it. That is also a different energy that, like, oh, this isn't a stinker. Like, everyone is having a good time. Yep. There's no fake standing O's happening.
No,
like,
no.
We all were like, that was so fun! Like,
no, that's it.
We're so fun. Really, I'm going to leave happy. This is great.
It's actually the least intimidating, now that I've done it, it's the least intimidating part being an understudy, because it takes no time to win over the audience, even if they're disappointed that I'm not Alex Brightman. The content and the content in general and the visual of everything, I win them over immediately.
You
know what I mean? It's
you
just
did.
One of those things where, and especially the wig, the makeup, the suit, Like, there's no way that anybody's going to be like, that's not Beetlejuice. You know what I mean? It's just not a thing.
Also, like, come on. Like, if you don't have your contacts in, you could be Alex Brandon.
Oh, it did.
Like,
very
you guys look constantly. Very similar.
Oh,
so,
absolutely. I couldn't come out. More so even in School of Rock, I couldn't come out the stage door. Like, if I wasn't on for Dewey, I couldn't come out the stage door. Because they'd be like, Alex. I'd be like, no. And they're like, they just wouldn't understand. They thought it was,
oh, wow.
I probably ruined his reputation being like, no, I'm not Alex. You know what I mean? People are like, yeah, you are. You just don't want to
sign. It sounds like you have a good relationship.
Oh, he's wonderful. I mean, like, I love him. I really, like, and it's specific, like, not that I was so keen to understudy again, but to understudy Alex is, like, a treat. It really is because he's so kind. He's so, he's so respectful of my talent and what I do, and both of us understand the differences between us, even though we look, you know, so similar. Yeah. And he loves knowing that because he hates being out of the show, as anybody does. Yeah. He loves knowing that if he's out, that I'm on, that I'm taking care
of
the show.
Care
you know,
of it.
And
you
that's
totally do
that's
it.
A wonderful, you know, wonderful feeling of respect to feel from because it's no matter what, it's an intimidating and sort of delicate relationship between an understudy and the person playing the part, no matter what, that sort of both people have to tend to, you know, for each one's ego, you know what I mean? So he's wonderful, really.
Well, I love that. Let's rewind further.
Great.
Were you C-section or natural?
C-section.
Same.
Platinum
Me
gay.
Too!
We were all... Good job.
Is that why we're all here?
Yep.
Just trying to get that womb back.
The C-section podcast.
But enough about me. Let's talk about you. What do you think of me?
We like to ask all of our guests what their first impression of each of us was.
Of each of you?
Yeah.
Well, the first time I met you, you were wearing that... very rare Into the Woods shirt. So my first impression was like, I want to punch you and take it. And you, I just met just now, and you're just so lovely. I mean, I love redheaded ladies. I have a history of, like, you know, long friendships with
so
redheaded ladies.
What? It's a fetish.
I love a fiery bitch, I will say. You know what I mean? There's something about it because it, you know. Makes
what
me
if
feel
you're
strong.
Like, I hate you and you're inauthentic.
It's really strange. It's really bad.
Can't wait to be done.
You went to the Boston Conservatory.
I did.
Tell us about that. When did you graduate? Like, who was
I
in your class
07.
That people may know?
Dan Michike, who you've had on your podcast.
Yes.
We were freshman year roommates.
Wicked musical director.
Maybe the oddest pairing of all. It was my fault. Because I lied on my, like, form about, like, who you should... Because I, like, aspired to be, you know, a clean non-smoker.
Oh, my God.
But we had a great time. We had a great time.
Amazing.
No, he's... I mean, he... And talk about a brilliant... Another brilliant musician.
Yeah.
My God.
Mm-hmm.
He is so smart. Anna Nogueira, who is right now... I mean, she's an actress, but she's also a fantastic playwright. And who else was in... My class, Chelsea Stock, who has been in a couple
yes.
of stuff. Yeah, Chelsea Morgan Stock. I can't think of it. Lots of Aaron Jackson, wonderful comedian.
Aaron Jackson?
Yeah.
Like Garbage Troll?
Yes, Garbage Troll.
I love Garbage Troll.
He's brilliant.
Oh, he's weird.
And his sister is wonderful. Like, there, but his sister was a year or two ahead of us.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, that's
he performs
family.
At Club Cumming a lot.
He's so funny.
So dumb.
Yeah.
Fierce.
No, I personally loved Boston Conservatory.
I was gonna say, was it your first choice? Was it your only choice?
It was my first choice of the schools that I, you know, applied to. That definitely was my number one because they had a directing emphasis. You could spend your how were you gonna spend your senior year? You could emphasize in something, and I want to end up directing / do direct and directing, and so I knew that that would be a great fit for me. And it was. I think it's you know, it's a conservatory program, so it's much more it was much more suited to me. Like I was terrible at chemistry because I knew I would never use it. Like I knew from a very young age that I would be performing, and I was just like, fuck this noise.
Right.
Unless you're in Beetlejuice and you need to do some stage magic and poofs and fires and...
Poofs. And then I'm going to catch everybody
stage
on fire.
Stage science. Yeah.
What did you direct your senior year?
Into the Woods.
Wait. I might have seen it.
What?
Who was Sasha in it?
Sasha Weiss?
Was she Rapunzel? Cinderella?
No. No, you saw
I
a
saw
different
the other
one.
One.
You saw a different one.
Damn it.
No, Sasha Weiss
would have been really good.
Sasha Weiss was Cinderella's mother in The Voice of the Giant in mine, but Stephanie Umo was Cinderella. Anna, who I mentioned before, was Baker's wife. It was fantastic. I mean, it was like, it was great.
Oh, if I could go back.
I have a video. I'll let you. We'll see. It's, oh my God. I mean, it's.
I'll bring the popcorn.
No, it's lit, and it's literally. I'll tell you all about it later. But it's a production that I'm still. I consider that like the workshop production. It's I'm literally shopping it to theaters right now because it's wonderful. It's a wonderful version of it.
Amazing.
But yeah, I loved it. I did Pillow Man. You know, it was I mean, it was
Pillow
able
Man.
To do a lot. Andrew Durand was not in my class. There was just a lot of wonderful, wonderful, talented people around for me to play with at that time. So.
And then you came straight to the city.
I did.
And booked Grease.
I did. Well, I did a national tour of Seussical the Musical. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I love Susan.
I do too. I had so much fun. It was at TheaterWorks.
Amazing, Maisie.
I wish. No, I'd rather be Gertrude. Gertrude's the best part in the show.
Yes.
No, I was Horton the elephant. You
Dreams.
Know, it was really, really
Who
fun. I had a great
Horton.
Yeah, and that's how I got my equity card. Was because you're part stage manager on those tours. It was great, which I actually loved. Like I'm an Eagle Scout. Longtime Boy Scout, so I was first ASM, like
you're
unloading the truck,
Eagle
like
Scout.
Yeah.
You're a man of many talents.
Picks or didn't happen.
Listen, what's that?
Picks or didn't happen.
I'll show you picks. It's real. I got it early. I finished by 16 because anyway.
Holy
but
shit.
I loved that it was all one nighters, and you would put the set up yourself and unload the set, put it back in the truck, and then drive to the next place, and then put up the set again. So I loved it. It felt like there was so much pride in performing on a stage that you rolled out yourself. You know what I mean? It was
what
really.
What company was that with?
TheaterWorks.
Got it.
TheaterWorks USA.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good times. But then, yes, I started going to lots of EPAs and ECCs and booked Grease from an EPA. Because the guy who I replaced had torn his ACL the night before. It was one of those things where if I had gone to the second EPA like a week later, I wouldn't have gotten it because I was already cast. So that's why I'm like, go, show up. You know what I mean? Like, just be first in line and you never know what's going to happen. But that was very lucky.
Wow.
I was ridiculously lucky to make my brother.
I've never heard that story before. Had I gone to the one next week, it's not even like, had I not gone.
No.
It's had my schedule.
Yeah.
Who did you play?
Roger. He sings Mooning.
Who the fuck is Roger?
Roger and Jan.
Oh, Roger and Jan.
He's Putsy
that
in the movie.
Jan in
that
high
was
school.
Jan.
Mooning?
Mooning.
Mooning.
It's a song. It's a great song. Great.
Was that with Laura Osnes?
Laura Osnes, yes.
So I went to college with Laura.
Oh, amazing.
So she was in my class.
Yes.
She's our only, like, famous person.
She's a sweetheart.
Yeah.
She's a real
dear.
That was a really, you know, I joined. I was the first replacement into that. So it was still Matt Saldivar and Jeff Brown. It was like a great, 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 great group of people.
Mm-hmm.
I was very lucky.
I mean, your dream came true. Like, did it feel like you had always imagined it would?
What is your dream?
Honestly, no. I'm going to go ahead and just be honest and not, like, sugarcoat it in any way. No, it was really hard. It was, I was the only cast member who wasn't there from the beginning. I joined 9 months in. And I guess I don't feel bad about saying it. And at that time I joined, morale was really low. It was just, they hadn't gotten great reviews. They hadn't,
That's a reality.
Yeah. They hadn't been supported in certain ways, where even if they had gotten good reviews, it would be great to keep morale up in different ways. But, so no, and the guy that I had replaced was beloved in the company. He was like the cast clown, and I was like 23 and just like, I'm on Broadway, you know what I mean? I was just like a different, nobody was had the energy that I was bringing into it, which was ridiculous because I was a 23-year-old making my Broadway debut, so who else was going to be that excited 9 months in? But it was really hard. That was really hard to deal with by myself and to sort of understand that Broadway was no different than you know, the public school auditorium that I set the Seussical set up in that one day, like, it was just another house. It's just a different paycheck and a different sort of bragging rights, but I had more fun on Seussical than I did doing Grease on Broadway, making my Broadway debut. Of course, no matter what, like, that first performance, bowing, I had a friend there who brought signs, you know what I mean? Like, it was ridiculous. Yes, that moment of achievement is one thing, but the actual act of it playing out and living out your dreams, I had to learn some very hard lessons. And that's why, like, Matt Saldivar and Jeb Brown, you know, stopped me that one night. I, you know, started crying in the sink after washing out my hair, and they were just like, come here. Come here, let's talk about what this is. And they sort of let me know what Broadway really is. And it's a, you know, it's not, yes, there are these wonderful, wonderful highs, but there's also a lot of lows. And boy, were they right. And they set me up for to understand that it's not always and rarely ever what your 12-year-old self, you know, dreamed Broadway would be. And I still, you know, that's only occurred two or three times in my whole career where it's lived up to what Broadway dream. I had big Broadway dreams. You know.
Thank you for sharing that. I don't know how real people have gotten on that side of the spectrum of what it's like.
Well, that's so what they even... I knew that the guy I had replaced was coming back once he healed from his injury, so I left to do the tour of Grease, and I started with a fresh cast, and everybody was excited, and so many people, you know.
Sure.
And so I got that kind of fun experience again. I ended up staying on that tour for a year and a half just because I enjoyed it so much. You know what I mean?
Do you like touring?
Yes, I'm an old man now, but and I've done five. I've done, you know, I do. There is something super fun about touring, just because it's new, exciting. I love hotel rooms. Like, I love a clean bathroom. I love a beautiful shower. I love endless clean towels. Like, you know, so that's there is something really nice about that. But now, you know, as you get older, you are. Want to stay closer to home more, you know what I mean? And so I would do a tour again for the right show and the right part, I'm sure. But yeah, I've spent a lot of I probably spent half my time in New York touring almost.
Wow.
So we'll see.
All right.
I love that he just winked at me. Oh, I'm so in love.
You guys.
I'm so in love.
This is fun. I'm going to
So get who's your favorite audience member you've ever experienced?
Oh, my God. Elaine Stritch came to see Book of Mormon. And...
May she rest.
That I, you know, I'm not one of those people, like, I don't care about finding out ahead of time if there's celebrities in the audience. Like, I kind of like to know who's out there if that's happening. But I would have known either way because she was wearing all white. Just like white hat, white coat, white, you know. She's pretty silent throughout the whole thing. And then do you know, have you seen Book of Mormon? Either of you?
Yeah. It is my blind spot. I have not seen it yet.
Well, there's one spot towards the end of Act 1, right before my character saying Man Up, where the Elder Price basically breaks up with him. You know what I mean? And finally yells at him and screams like, I'm not your best friend. I just got stuck with you by the missionary training center. Dead silence. Always just like, oh, this is hurtful moment. In that moment, he said, I got stuck with you at the missionary training center. And it took everything I had inside me. Because I, no matter what, even in that moment, I was like supposed to start crying. It's this moment, you know, this emotional moment I had to get to. And I was just like, how the fuck am I supposed to block that out? Because I realized that that's what she had been waiting for the whole time. She was waiting for the other shoe to drop. And that is her whole essence of her life. But it, you know, and the kind of stories that she tells is there's nothing that ever lands in happiness. You know what I mean? There's nothing that she knows that at some point or another, it's not going to work out, no matter what it is. And she was just waiting for that moment. And so she came backstage after.
Oh, God.
And she... I actually have a fabric print of this moment because somebody took a picture of it on my wall because I'm obsessed with it. But she grabbed a hold of me and she looked right in my eyes. She goes, support me. Support me. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? Like, and then I, like, of course, I was just laughing my ass off because I couldn't believe anything of what was happening. But I know sounds the only reason I can think of, because I know that she was, I think she just wanted to have a moment with me as a scene partner. I know that that sounds so weird, but that's what she was trying. She was like, "Support me, look at me, you know." And I was just like, "Okay, Elaine Stritch." Like, but it was beautiful. It was just like, I'm so glad that I got that moment. The first two celebrities I had in Book of Mormon were Elaine Stritch and Mandy Patinkin, and I was like, please, I don't need Kanye. Please, just give me all the Sondheim celebrities. Seriously. Please, like, who's next? Please, Donna Murphy. Come on.
Sondheim celebrities.
Ugh.
That's a great story.
You and me both.
I know. Well, you haven't seen it. My hallway at home, I call it the Sondheim hallway, is every New York premiere playbill of Sondheim shows in chronological order. And it's awesome.
It's way good.
Wow.
Great. You know, I'm a very, very big Sondheim fan.
Do you think we'll get one more?
I left an empty spot. It's there.
There will always be.
Exactly. No, I'm hoping. I'm still very hopeful that.
I am too.
I would love to meet him one day.
Be really cool. You saved one seat for Elijah.
Yeah, literally. I'm hoping. Yeah. Best celebrity, for sure.
You got to work alongside Harvey Fierstein and Michael Urie last year.
Yeah. I'll start crying.
In Torch Song.
In Torch Song. That I love.
Yes.
Love.
Yeah.
Deeply.
Biggest regret of my life.
Not a big Broadway blockbuster musical.
No.
A very small, intimate, precious, beautiful.
Yes.
Play.
Yeah.
Was that new for you? Was that like a different space?
This,
for you?
Yes. Yeah. Well, totally. It came about for a lot of reasons. Mainly, because after School of Rock, I didn't want to sing anymore. I couldn't sing for a year after. It was either surgery or, to not sing. And so I didn't, and that's why I was in London, and I was assisting Lonnie Price. We'll get to that story. Yeah.
Oh my God, Pin. Okay,
and Pin. And then when I came back, I said, I needed to make some money. And so I was like, I would love it if I could do a play. You know what I mean? I would love to do, and I really wanted to be taken seriously. I always play clowns. Who always end up having to have a lot of emotional content, which is great. Like,
best.
I love that. But I really was hoping that I could be taken seriously. Because I coach, you know, I coach people in acting. Like, I really do consider myself an actor. And I know I have been blessed with an incredible voice. But it's really hard to prove that it's... that you're a better actor than that. Anyway, so... yeah, whoever thought of me to come in, bless them, that the story of Torch Song, at that time really resonated with me in like a terrifyingly like close way. And I knew that it was mine. There was something about it where I was just like, this is for me. I remember like Victoria Clark talking about in Light in the Piazza, talking about the marriage between the performer and the material. Mm-hmm. And that sometimes these things come into your life at just the right time. And this was it. It was the least, and even in the callback, I was not acting. It was triggering these emotions in me that were just very, very real at that time. So I loved it. I never got to perform it. When they announced that they were closing, they let us have a put-in for close families and family friends. I just met Max, but I knew it. So I was like, come, Max saw it.
Wow.
And that was just like the closest thing I'll get to heaven. There was like that and playing Floyd Collins in college, you know what I mean? Or like, I'll never play Floyd Collins again. Like, nobody, only in college will somebody believe, like, that guy can fit through that hole in that cave. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just know it'll never happen again. But at that time, God, being cast for your voice in college. Great, great, great. But it's moments like that where, like, I know it doesn't get any better than this. I know that this is exactly the kind of stuff that I would love to be doing, and and that you just don't have to work at. That was a really hard, like, Moises specifically with me, you know, it's just like, get rid of the mask. I want to see you. I want to see you. And I was like, I need the mask. I need it. I need it. It's too close. You know what I mean? And slowly, like, I would just let the mask go. But there's, I mean, there's just, like, it's so beautifully written, I think, too, and that I'll just say a line and I just burst into it. Like, there's just certain moments and certain things that I find so beautiful, because Harvey is the master at making you cry at the thing that you were just laughing at. And it's just, that's my favorite thing, you know. And even whether it be in Mormon or now in Beetlejuice, I love when people laugh when I'm crying. Like, there's something about making people laugh.
Laughter through tears is my favorite emotion.
There's something about, like, if somebody could really laugh at my tears, you know, I just, I love it. And so that play is just a whole laugh cry. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just the whole beautiful 3 hours of it. So, yeah, I want to do it. I would do it regionally. I would do it for
forever.
$200 a week at anywhere. I will just, like, I love that part. I love the play.
Some of the most, the best dramatic actors are the best comedians. I mean, Robin Williams, my favorite dramatic actor, my favorite comedic actor. I mean, Jim Carrey, the same. They are pulling off something surprising.
Yeah.
I mean, it shouldn't be surprising anymore, but, you know, the first time that they dipped their toe into the dramatic side of their selves was like, whoa. I mean, even Adam Sandler, like, come on, he's done some.
Well, I think I remember reading an article about the guy who wrote the story of the Testament of Mary, and talking about going to see the play of it and getting so worried at the beginning because they were laughing with her and doing all these things, but he realized by the end that they wouldn't cry for her if they didn't laugh with her at the beginning.
Exactly. And
that's just such a wonderful lesson, no matter what. Like, you just have to
make me feel something.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
no matter what it is,
yeah.
and then at the end I'll also feel something.
Exactly. So, you know, I like that.
Oh, I just love you so much.
You're
oh
sweet. You're sweet.
Oh, God. How do you tap into your inner Sasha Fierce? Do you need to tap into a Beetlejuice moment?
Like, in what sense, Sasha Fierce? Like just in general?
I guess I'm speaking...
Like a Sasha Weiss Fierce?
God bless.
I guess more about Beetlejuice, because that is such a high octane, using a lot of energy in very specific ways.
That is fine. There's something about the
and a School of Rock, too.
Yeah.
I mean, both of those are...
You know what? And the difference is those two, let's say Dewey and Beetlejuice,
yes.
energy-wise, much easier to get into than an Elder Cunningham or Buddy the Elf, because these two are angry and these two are the happiest people in the room. And so 8 shows a week, you can be angry. You can be angry, and you can be the angriest person in the room anytime.
Yes.
But trying to be the happiest person in the room when you really are not feeling it that day is difficult.
Yeah.
Is really, really hard to say. Especially Book of Mormon, to wait after all the boys have entered saying hello, and I have to top all of their happiness. You know what I mean? Like, that was just...
Oh, my
so
God.
I'd be
I love this.
I mean, I'd be running in place. I'd be doing everything, but, like... My mom always said, like, preach faith till you got it. And that's the idea. Is like, if you smile enough, you're going to feel happy. You
there
will.
We go.
It's so stupid.
I
but
love that.
It's now what I've learned about, you know, with my anxiety. Like, if you really just keep on breathing, you're going to calm down eventually, you know. But you have to try. It's, you know, at the beginning, it's not going to feel like it's going to do nothing.
That's so true. It would be so hard to be Katie Couric every night, but I can be Joy Behar.
Yeah, exactly. That's, I mean, and honestly, even for Beetlejuice, the less energy I have, the better, because it almost, the train is going so fast. I remember I had a Gregory's cold brew before understudy rehearsal, and I was just like, I'm never doing that again. I don't need the extra energy.
Yeah.
The show is propelling me so fast. And that's it. Most of it's just like, if you get on the train goes. The show is going to happen whether you like it or not. Yeah. So you just have to stay.
That's
on
a terrifying part. It's like, oh, it's actually happening.
Yeah.
That reminds me of when I went to college, one of our scene study classes, they would make us, our school was kind of in the round, and so they would make us run a couple laps and then come into the room. Mm. So they would just be like chit-chatting with the other actors, students, and they're like, okay, the next people up, go run, and then we'll stop talking when you come in.
Yeah.
But until then, we're just going to chat. Whenever you walk through the door, I know you're ready.
Yeah.
Because the more tired you are,
yeah,
there's nothing else you're thinking about.
No, and even,
it kind of like beats it out of you a little bit.
And then just, I mean, you saw Tuesday, and I can specifically tell you, I hadn't, it had been a week and a half since I'd done the show, and the whole day I spent saying, what makes you think you can do this tonight? You're not funny right now. What makes you think you're going to be funny tonight? I could not quell, like, the voices that make it, you know. And then you go on stage and it happens, and it, but there is nothing, it's really, it's just very hard to think, and maybe if I were more in tune with my body in general, it'd be easier to do, but I have, it has, it's really hard for me to understand, that all of that is going to happen later. It's all going to just work. Your voice is going to be fine. Your legs are going to be fine. You know, it's just so weird. It's not an, I wish it was an instrument I could hold and check and say, okay, this is in place, this is in place, there's no reason why this won't work.
Yeah.
But it's not. Mm. And it, I know very well that my mental space is a huge part of that. And that if,
like, I promise nothing except that I'll be there.
Yeah.
And it, that's it's kind of all you
that,
need.
That you just have to balance all the time, and to not to say that, like, you know, I remember one show specifically in Mormon. I went on stage being very, something had been very, very upsetting 5 minutes before I went on stage. And I went out and had one of the best shows of my life. I somehow translated all that anger into happiness and was that. So it's not so much that it's just like, oh, if I'm in this place, I can't do it. Or it's that, it's just a constant.
Yeah.
That's where chemistry comes in for me anyways, where it's just figuring out, okay, what is the alchemy of all of these things in my life? How do I translate that into what I need to do tonight? Mm-hmm. And something like Beetlejuice is really, really easier in that sense because I mean, Moises would be very happy with this because I have brought more of myself to this character than probably any other character, which is so weird to say.
You seem very tuned in.
Yeah.
It's tuned in.
It's odd almost that, like, a demon is the closest I've come to being myself on stage. Maybe
baby
that's
steps.
Correct.
Baby steps.
You know.
Baby steps.
Yeah.
What are some dream roles that you are just looking forward to getting your hands on?
I don't know if I'll ever get cast up, but I mean, I want to be George and send them Park with George. You know, that, oh, that was, my God, that was one of the first, I would see your, you know, wrist tattoo. That's it. I mean, that's the odd dream.
In that coat.
In that coat, yeah, exactly. Please. I mean, it really is, it's one of those things that said, talk about fun things to sing. Man, it's written in such a strange part of the male voice, and it fits so well for me. God bless. Yeah, not that I'm like, ooh, because it doesn't fit in a lot of places.
It.
Exactly. So I would love, I mean, I'd love that. And honestly, I would still count Arnold, because I never got to actually do it. I would love to do Arnold in Torch Song somewhere. Oh, God, but I mean, I'm hoping eventually I'll get to do, like, Pseudolus, and there's lots of wonderful character roles that I know are probably more appropriate. But more so, I mean, I would love to be directing more than... I'd give up all my dream roles in order to direct a couple of Sondheim shows, even, you know.
Amazing.
That would be, that's the real goal from all of this. And that's why I keep on, there was a time too in my life where every final bow I'd be like, guys, my last bow as an actor, you know what I mean? And just like for 5 years
share.
And then, you know, but I really wanted to, I really, you know, and I keep on, and I do keep on doing things to sort of stray away from it. But I keep coming back because I keep getting offered ridiculous role, you know what I mean, as well. Not that I can't turn down certain things. Like I would have the same week that I got the offer for Torch Song, I got this musical that I was workshopping in London finally came through. But I literally couldn't do it because of money. I could not. I'd spent so much money, you know, breaking away to be directing for free and starting at the bottom of that sort of thing that mm-hmm. I just didn't have the money to say, yeah, God, I can't even follow through on these steps that I've taken because I don't have the money to. But yeah, eventually it'll all work out. I mean, and I don't see my acting career as a departure from my directing career sure. because I'm learning so much. And every show I do is, you know, whether they know it or not, is an internship with that director. And I've learned so much from the way Alex Timbers directs as opposed to Moises Kaufman. You know what I mean? Sure. I've worked with all of these brilliant... brilliant directors and able to, you know, steal their gold
an
as well.
Internship with multiple directors. You're brilliant. That's so great.
You're very sweet.
But no, I mean, people are in all kinds of different scenarios and you can either look at them with this yeah. kind of vision, goggles, or you can look at them with these goggles.
Right.
What can you get from any of these situations?
I'm a supreme optimist. Like, it really, and that is great in a lot of ways, and it gets me in a lot of trouble.
Sure.
But that was it, and I mean, when it worked the best for me was when I was auditioning 10 times a week, I would go to EPAs and ECCs, and I wouldn't care. If I got a callback for anything, I would just say, you get to sing with a piano today. This is a free, mm-hmm. you know, like, you yeah. get to just, yeah. like, try this song
free
out.
Dance
you
class.
Know, exactly. And that's the only way to survive that kind of rejection over and over again. I did not get a single callback for anything until Grease. You know what I mean? It was like, and I probably went to 100 different things. And, of course, things I wasn't even right for, but I was like, I've never been in for this casting director. They have to be here. I might as well show up, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, optimism is important when it comes to that sort of things to really
in
make sure
this
that,
business.
Yeah.
This,
yeah.
I'm not even in it. But no, yeah, but in your business,
yeah.
it is. Let's talk about Lonnie Price.
Ugh.
What's that story?
I love him. We got tickets to the screening of Best Worst Thing That Ever Could Have Happened at Lincoln Center.
There, we were there.
Theater.
I sent them to you.
Oh my God, really?
I probably emailed them to you.
Holy
yeah.
shit.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
Yeah.
I saw it. Loved it. Maybe my favorite documentary of all time. Well, because I also loved Merrily... I mean, we could talk about the whole... I mean, I could talk about that documentary for an hour. But the main thing was, in the documentary, Lonnie talked about how he wrote to Hal Prince and said, hey, I think you're great. I want to work with you. Whatever. And,
No.
The guy I was with at the time, you know, I was like, I'm gonna write Lonnie and I'm gonna do that and maybe he'll talk to you. And he was like, well, I know him, I'll introduce you all, you know. So we met on New Year's Day and we were just supposed to meet, but we ended up having an hour long conversation and which at one point he I knew he respected me when he said, directors hate you, don't they? And I was like, yes, they do.
Like, why?
Yes.
Why?
Because I'm
why?
Too smart. I'm too smart for an actor. I'm too like and I've
you're plugged
I've,
into
I've
the
learned
other side.
I've very much learned how to control my mouth now.
Got it.
But you know, I have made people change. You know, where people enter the stage that have nothing to do with me, just because. That was the correct side of the stage to enter from yeah. in terms of their strength and what the story that they were telling.
Yeah.
Shit like that. Like, I just need to calm down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But being an assistant to somebody great with have too many opinions. And at that time, I was still doing School of Rock, but I wanted out. I knew I needed to get out. I didn't know if he would work with me, but I put in my notice at School of Rock 2 days later, because I just knew, I was like, if Lonnie can see that I'm a director, then I need to be doing this. I was going to be going to London anyways. He was doing Carousel at the ENO mm-hmm. there, and I said, do you mind if I just tag along? I'm there to, you know, bring coffee, do whatever, and he was like, yeah. So I became, you know, assistant director, but like, gopher extraordinaire
yeah.
to this 80-person cast. You know what I mean? It was like an amazing huge, huge, huge production. Lots of assistant directors, a lot of people, you know what I mean, to manage all these things. But then he asked me back. He was doing Lady Day at Emerson's Grill for the first time in London, and he asked me if I would be his. He couldn't bring over his Danny, his normal assistant, and I was already there. He was like, "Do you want to come, you know, help me with Audra?" And I was like,
"Yeah,
fuck yes, I do."
Yeah, Audra, who can I?
Yeah, exactly. Can you write that down? So I was just there for a bit with that, but the first time I heard the material at all, because I didn't see it on Broadway. I was gone at the time that it was on Broadway, was me and Lonnie in a studio with her and the band, and that was it. And she did the whole show first day to just me and Lonnie, and I did all the audience interaction stuff with her, and I was like, fuck my life, like this is insane. And finally, I'll show you the picture, but finally on the day I had to leave, I could only stay to like a couple previews because I was directing a workshop of Bonnie and Clyde at that time. But he, I brought in a picture of Audra and I at the Ragtime stage door when I was 14, and just like terrifyingly gleeful to be next to Audra McDonald. Yeah. But I was like, you know, I said, "Do you mind if we recreate this?" And she just lost her mind. Like Lonnie became like the person in the background. You know what I mean? I was just like, I can't believe this is my life right now. Like this is, but I didn't want a fangirl. Like the whole, like, and she was a new mom at that, very new mom at that time.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And so that's what I was trying to help with more than I was just like, I became more her personal assistant, make sure she had breakfast and stuff like that. And just making sure. But the coolest thing was she did the crazy voice the whole time. And finally one day.
Was that your Billie Holiday?
That was Billie.
That's
I don't know.
Really good.
I mean,
that's really, Billie. Really good.
One day she was like, "My voice is tired. Do you mind if I just sing, you know, use my own voice?" And he was like, "Yeah, it's fine." She started singing God Bless the Child in her normal Audra voice, and my body started freaking out. It had such a crazy reaction that it didn't acknowledge that it was actually her until that moment. That moment was like what proved that it was happening. I was just like, I can't believe this is real. This is what's like saving your voice, is like your normal dulcet tones. Like, Jesus Christ. It was beautiful. It was
this
like a wonderful.
What's saving your voice.
Yeah.
Normal.
Your normal, but you know.
I had no idea about this alternate life.
I still have my visa to work there.
Fabulous.
For the next couple of years.
London, if you're listening.
I'd love to go back. Love to go back.
Are you working on directing anything right now in the pipeline?
No.
How does that work?
No.
You kind of have to quit.
I mean, it's
acting,
yeah. It's,
right?
I mean, it's really there are people who can ride multiple horses. I can't. I'm very. I also like giving all of my attention to whatever I'm mm-hmm. supposed to be contracted for, anyways. No, there is that Into the Woods version that I'm really trying to work. I have one of the producers from Torch Song and I became good friends, and I told him about this idea, and he was very excited about it, and so he's pitching it around to see if we can do it regionally before trying to sort of bring it into New York, which
very
would be
cool.
The end goal. I mean, this is a I would love to be recognized for that. Mm. And some having something like even Torch Song, doing a straight play, for me helps, I think, in terms of people thinking of me credibly about as a
well,
as a
it's
real
been
performer.
Done before. I mean, Lonnie Price is a great example.
Exactly. I knew that. You know, it even is. I mean, there were times in rehearsal where I'd just hear him from behind, and I'm like, Charlie, it's Charlie Kringas. Like, I just can't, you know, he's iconic.
And he still sounds the same.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's
exactly
such a love.
The same.
He's such a love.
So, yeah, there's a lot of people, you know, and Hunter, I worked with Hunter Foster and picked his brain. Finally, on the last day, I was like, hey, I want to be at a, you know, most of the time I don't like, if I can help it, for the director to know that I'm also a director, because then there is that feeling of just like, oh, are you, and even Lonnie, you know, we went out to dinner one time in Carousel, and he was just like, so do you just have your own version of this in your head? And I was like, no, I'm on your ship. No matter what, like, you've created, like, I have no idea what version
you're not
I would be doing.
The project,
you know. No.
Well, that's a good
from
question,
that.
Though, that he asked. I mean.
And it was, you know, that, and he was like, so, well, you know, do you have notes? And I was like, well, yeah, got some notes. I mean,
sure, like, as an audience.
He was like, send them to me, send them to me. He was very, I mean, very kind, very sweet, and really was so supportive to me at a time when I really needed
that. He's good like that.
He is. He's just he's a good man. He's a really good man. I'm forever thankful to him.
Hi-ho! Hi-ho!
We have another question that we ask all of our guests.
Okay.
There are seven very well-known dwarves in history. If you were the eighth dwarf, what would your name be?
It's so stupid, but I'd probably be something like Hopeful.
Hopeful dwarf.
I love that for you.
I know.
I love that journey for you.
Thank you.
And no one really does the full.
Yeah.
Everyone does like
the E.
Horny, belty, slutty. I love hopeful for you. That's great.
Hopeful dwarf.
I am. You know, there's a difference between all the. But that would be yeah. I really love that, and that's what I mean. In terms of knowing what I sell that's different from Alex Bratt, you know what I mean? I know that I've got a lot of heart. I sell a lot of heart. And I love selling that. If that's what, you know, my brand is, I'm totally fine with that. Both of my parents are ministers, actually. Growing up, we're ministers. And so I did grow up in the church, watching them preach and be inspirational, and I do think of that as sort of. I didn't realize I sort of went into the family business until college, when I sort of realized, just like, oh, I'm just getting up in front of a group of people and telling a story, and hopefully that they're morally and emotionally moved by it,
and you know they believe in it,
I do strongly believe that musical theater and the musical theater canon can in itself be a religion and religious text, because it, I think it is.
And the theater is church.
Exactly. It's spiritually transcendent to, I think, people who view it in that way. Seeing Light in the Piazza, you know, was the best, most transcendent moment of my life, probably. You know what I mean? Mm. No drugs. You know?
No drugs required.
But it's, so I very much believe in the restorative powers of theater, and that kind of connection. I always say that I picture it sort of like there's a rope attached to my gut, and then there's ropes that spread out to the audience, and it's a whole push and pull thing. But I think that that pulley system in between is God to me. You know what I mean? Is that sort of being able to connect like that with people, and even that's what I love. I mean, I make money so that I can go see theater, because I love being in an audience. I love being a part of a community, experiencing something together, and how that specific performance, you being in that seat, your response to it changes the entire dynamic. That's everybody else is on stage is balancing that alchemy of you in that seat, you know?
Theater recharges my battery.
Exactly.
I hadn't seen a show for, you know, a month or so, and I was like, ah, yes, okay, I'm good for another.
It makes
week
a difference. I really, and especially and that's now how I judge how much I like something, because something can be wonderful and well done and all these things, but if it doesn't make an emotional impact on me, I don't really care. It's not so much that it's bad or it's this. Mm-hmm. It's more so that like. I'm not leaving with anything.
Yeah.
Theater can be sort of a disposable art, and you have to find something that lingers with people, that makes them ask questions, or that makes them feel something that in that moment that they're going to take away, or that changes them. Yeah, even if they don't like remember it forever, that it changes
them. Or just
have
fun.
Yeah, exactly.
And laugh and be surprised and enjoy.
Yeah.
What people are putting out.
Yeah.
You know?
But that's exactly why I love when, once you've made them laugh, just to have one moment, even if it's just one to drive home that there is heart somewhere in there. Yeah. That's all I'm looking for.
How beautiful is Sophia Ann Caruso? Did I get her name right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
She plays Lydia, which is the Winona Ryder role in the movie.
Yeah. She's a star. I mean, she's an incredibly interesting creature of the world.
That's how
I was blown away by her, you know, just starting in rehearsals, and at that time she was 17 then. And it just sort of seems like some alien has taken over a little girl's body, and it's beautiful to watch her sort of blaze.
I was like, you're doing you're doing you. You are not a cookie cutter.
Yeah, and she's super fun. She, you know, going on with her. I mean, let's just say there's been plenty of times as an understudy where the person you're playing opposite does not change their performance even though you're a different person.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Yeah.
And I mean, in general, this company is just a huge improv team. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
you could tell.
Leslie Kritzer's kind of like leads the charge of that. You know what I mean? She's just brilliant. So everybody is reacting to what I'm doing. And specifically her, we have so much time together. We just had a blast. I really, you know, love having creating that particular friendship. I think is super funny and super, I try and make it emotional by the, you know what I mean? That these are two friends that have had a lot of fun together, and it's sad to say goodbye. Yeah. You know what I mean? When they do, and I do mean it, you know, there's, you know, when I say like, you know, I think I'll miss you most of all, Scarecrow, you know, it's just like, oh, yeah.
Love those little Easter eggs.
Yeah.
I love the video you posted of your first bow as Beetlejuice is coming up from under the stage, and you just hear the audience yelling Beetlejuice 3 times.
Yeah.
And like, there's the two of you.
Yeah. It's nuts.
Like, the view that nobody else gets.
I will say, too, it wasn't until the Beetlejuice dresser, Travis, took that video, and I did not hear, this sounds so weird, but I did not hear the screams like that until I saw that video. There's something about, you can talk yourself out of anything, and there's so much, especially even when I was doing that performance, like, I was just so self-critical and fixing all these things that, until I heard that video back, I was just like, oh, I might have done okay.
They like
you know,
me.
I think
they really like me.
And especially this past week, I started having a lot of fun. Now that I know where the fire goes, you know, there's a lot of tricks, a lot of puppets, a lot of, you know,
yeah, I mean,
crazy
it could
elements.
Be a very dangerous.
Yes, yes. And I did. Even on, I think my first show, I sprained my ankle coming off the sandworm after riding it in.
Hate when that happens.
You know, because that's a thing in this show. Ridiculous.
So fun.
So now that all of those things are sort of a little more mastered, I'm looking people in the eyes and seeing that, you know, and then really paying attention to every single moment.
And
now
you're on stage a lot. I mean, the movie, Michael Keaton is not in the movie a whole lot, but I love your energy through the, a lot of it. I mean, 75% of the show.
It's a good bit. Like, I will say there are nice breaks, but it does seem like he's on stage a lot.
Yeah. You're the host with the most.
I mean, this is a much easier, track energy wise than something like School of Rock was. Like, I think for both Alex and I, School of Rock was boot camped us into a way where this show's kind of easy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's ridiculous, but it would take 3 Beetlejuices to equal 1 Dewey. So, and that's also why he hasn't had to call out in 200 shows, you know, as well, because he's crafted it in a way where it can be done 8 shows a week for sure.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Did you have a relationship with the movie before?
I didn't. My first audition for it was, it was actually the first audition I went to when I came back from London in May last year. And I was like, okay, I'll watch the movie. And I didn't like the movie. I was like, what the fuck is this about? Like, it didn't seem to have much of a plot to me, honestly, you know.
Sure.
And so when I read the script and it started off with the death of Lydia's mother at her funeral, I was just like, oh, now we have somewhere to go. This is why this girl's obsessed with death. This is why, you know what I mean? It just seemed like, I thought that the musical somehow really wrote in the story that is somehow present but also absent from the movie, where it works. Like, if you added all this subtext into the movie, it would make complete sense, but it's just not there. So I know that's probably controversial, but I think it's something like Goonies, where if you didn't grow up with it, it looks crazy now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, exactly. I don't know if Beetlejuice holds up.
But yeah. I will say, like, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, you know, Tim Burton's first film, was my jam-a-lam. Like, that was...
Why isn't that on Broadway?
Oh, my God. Well, Pee-wee
He would have to
do it. Oh, my God. And I did see the Pee-wee Herman show on Broadway, another Alex Timber show.
Oh, that makes sense.
But, yeah, no, so I understand it, and now people look at Pee-wee's Big Adventure, they're like, nutbags. They're like, okay, but when you're a kid, it's all,
I hear you,
know.
I
it's
see
like
you,
how
and...
many drugs but I'm, were present.
I remember just even in previews just realizing how popular Beetlejuice is just as a brand, you know what I mean? And a movie, whether it's the movie or the cartoon series, or like, people die for this show and are huge, huge, huge
fans. Oh, everyone's
fans.
Uncle loves
I didn't
it.
Know that either.
I didn't. I, mean, I really
knew,
was surprised.
I knew I grew up with the movie and thought it was funny and had my favorite little bits in it, but I did not know the Beetlejuice brand was a thing.
And
that was hugely surprising to me.
And it's kind of like in the same way that it attracted a certain type of person for the cast as well. You know what I mean? It's like, that's what I say about the cast. It's just like, we are all such a... misfit toys, you know what I mean, all thrown together, the where it's just like, oh, thank God for you and the show, you know, it really like the casting of the show
calling all weirdos
feel, you know what I mean, like, but there should be a place for weirdos, you know what I mean, as well, like, and then thank God it's you know, that they did cast weirdos in this instead of your average chorus type, you know what I mean, if that's what I would say. So I love that it is a bunch of, like, weirdos, because I'm a weirdo, and I, you know, I love sort of dark material, and there's a lot of jokes in this that I think, you know, take a specific type of person to really enjoy.
Well, it's
enjoy.
More adult than I was expecting, which
Agreed.
Was maybe dumb, because the movie is very adult.
Well, the one in D.C., I only saw, like, an archival video of the one in D.C., but... I was disgusted. I was actually like I had, you know, I'd heard that the reviews in DC had called it out for sort of being gone so far. And I was like, okay, let's just see what this is. And boy,
like,
wow, it was, I mean,
you want
it was,
families
it's, there was
to
like
come,
a,
don't
the opening
you?
Number talked about like butt fucking the ushers. You know what I mean? Like it was the pig had a penis that of course like Leslie Kritzer found a way to put her mouth on. You know what I mean? And that's when I was like, hands up, I'm done, you guys. Come on, come on.
Yeah.
And so the changes that they did, but like, I never, you know, even when I saw the, like, a reading of it when they were, like, right before Broadway, like, I thought that was still the dirty version. You know what I mean? Like, the version that it is now, basically. Mm-hmm. It's still plenty dirty, but it's, like, fun dirty, as opposed to just like,
no
oh
one walked
my
out.
God. Like,
no one walked out.
The pendulum had to swing one way. So
you know,
it could come back and find its happy.
Not that I'm a prude in any way, but I was just like, this is a lot, and this is a lot to ask of a normal, you know, Broadway audience.
Yeah, like $150 ticket.
Yeah, and they got it. I mean, they got a really good blend to where, you know, now the F-bombs that do drop are strategically placed,
and
that's
super
it.
Effective.
You know, and super effective. You know, so I think it's. I mean. Honestly, because I really have just been a fan. I haven't done anything on it until, like, this past month. So, I'm just a super fan of the show. And everybody who comes to it is just like, this is really good. It's always that surprised sort of feeling where it's just like, I fucking love this. And I'm like, well, yeah, it's a really good show. I don't
thought,
know what to tell
I
you.
I like, the Variety review, especially, was, like, what my thoughts on it were.
Sure.
Because I was, like, trying to find something. Like, I need to read what I thought, and I was like, the Variety one nailed it.
I guess I remember on opening before going into the party, I looked, you know, because I honestly expected raves, and if anything, I see tons of theater, I trust my taste, you know, very strongly, and I have reasons to trust it, and so I was expecting, you know, if not raves, like excitement, and so seeing that how much negativity there was. Really made me question everything about what I was thinking. You know, and I was like, am I sentimentally attached to this? Like, no, I wasn't even a part of it in DC. Like, I have no attachment to it. And starting to understand, I think I think that there's an age cutoff, honestly. I think if you're over 50, you're going to think it's crass. You're going to think you're not going to get a lot of the jokes because there's a lot of millennial jokes. But, like, kids, people my age, you know what I mean? Like, endlessly die for it. You know what I mean? And
really, it captures the essence of the movie. If I brought my parents, they'd love absolutely. It really holds.
Well, and it was one of those things where I know... This might be controversial to say, but I know that Tony voters didn't even come to see it because they heard it was bad. Because if they had come to see it, we would have won Best Set.
Mm. Oh, the absolutely.
Set is, I mean, I love the set for Hadestown, and I'm all for the first female set designer winning. But dear God, they really should have even given a special Tony for our set designer, our lighting designer, and our projection designer, because they're doing things in this that have never been done before. Yeah. I remember in tech, the opening curtain, when the moon starts to draw itself, I rushed to anyone around me. I was like, what the fuck is happening? Tell me what is happening. And they explained that it was an LED screen with a scrim in front of it, that the scrim had been painted. So it looks like a painted drop that is changing. Like, and I've just never, like, I mean, I saw the Sunday in the Park with George projects. I've seen all sorts of things done with projections and LED screen, but nobody had ever made it look old school, and all of a sudden it looked like a South Pacific old school drop that was painting itself. Like, and so I know, I was at the Tonys, I saw the response of just like when Beetlejuice was mentioned in nominations, and then the room exploded after the number.
Because
it was great. It was a great number. It was just our opening number.
Yeah.
And because nobody in that room had seen it. Nobody had seen it. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is... And that's what I think we need to be careful. If I am going to get on a soapbox, I think we need to be careful about who we're choosing to believe these days in terms of reviews. And
I believe myself. Everything, and that's it.
I do believe that, you know, the New York Times critics pick means nothing at this point, especially because it's been given out so many times. Like, The Inheritance is going to open in a couple weeks, and it deserves a critic's pick, and it'll get it, but it doesn't really mean much now because the past seven shows that have opened have gotten a critic's pick. So, so anybody who isn't coming to see Beetlejuice, and there's people, you know, who I'll say, oh, come see Beetlejuice, they're like, oh, no. And I'm like, you just need to come. Like, it's not a... I know you've heard whatever, but, like, it's... And maybe we need to think about how we categorize different shows now, too, because, you know, I mean, I remember the same year that, you know, Band's Visit and Escape to Margaritaville were being judged on the same platform, you know what I mean? And I was just like, they're trying to do two very, very different things, and you can't say that this is so much less than because it's not something that is completely different.
Yes. Exactly right.
It you can know, just and so be
in,
fun.
In terms of an entertainment... show, which I do believe that Beetlejuice is, you know, and it has, you know, some surprisingly touching moments here and there, you know what I mean, and it ends up being really good theater, but for the most part it is entertainment. For what it's trying to do, it's a 10. It really is. It's especially what it set out to do, it thoroughly achieves.
And if you're a visual person, oh my god,
so trippy. That's why I mean, like,
so trippy. Like, if you haven't seen it yet, I'm smiling ear to ear because I'm excited for for you to see it.
That's, I mean, like, and I pride myself on, like, knowing how stagecraft, even when I was 8, I had to know how the mirror in Phantom of the Opera worked. I needed to learn that it was 3 panes of glass, you know what I mean, that slowly slide out. But, and so that's why, even when the first moment of the show happened and I had no idea how they did it, I was just like, you sons of bitches!
Yeah.
You're gonna drive me nuts. If I were just a normal audience member, I would spend the whole time just being like, how'd they do that? How the fuck they do that? Because there's so much cool, beautiful magic. And then there's some really simple stagecraft, like Alex Timbers' really extraordinaire special stuff. I love it. This is one of those experiences that lives up to 12-year-old Broadway dreams, honestly. Cool. And even, I would say that even before going on, just because of the people in the building and the show.
Yeah, it seems like a happy company and a company that's willing to go for it.
Yes. And a really just together. Supportive, everybody, you know, it's lovely. And especially between Alex Timbers and our stage manager, Maddie, style trickles down. I know style trickles down and they are just so, everything is out of love and goodness. So everybody, you know, nobody calls out. I mean, like, it's a really rare thing, you know, for even people to call out in the way that normally, by this point in a run, everybody's gone. You know what I mean? There's lots of leaflets flying.
Well, the holidays are coming up. It's going to be packed. When I went last week, it was... I think it looks sold out.
It is.
And it's
a
huge theater. It's not one of these little ones.
Growing more and more. You know, even... It's odd. It's really, really odd. Like, we won no Tonys. We did another... You know what I mean? And
that's
it is
insane
becoming,
to me.
I mean, the social media aspect of it is growing so fast. It is huge with young people. I mean, like, people who didn't grow up with the movie.
Right.
That's what's so weird to me, you know? But they're more like
Agreed.
Me. We're like, I don't really care about the movie, but I like the musical, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's remarkable to see, you know, and I don't know. I mean, we learned from Be More Chill that, you know, a young, huge fan base does not mean a long, healthy run on Broadway, but hopefully enough of them are begging their parents to take them, and I guess they are, because we are selling out the Winter Garden almost, you know.
Yeah.
We're like 94%
every
week, so it's great.
Selling out the Winter Garden.
Again.
You just work at the Winter Garden.
I know.
With, like,
you know,
little trips to other
theaters. Don't
you know,
I touch that back wall, and I'm like, you saw Follies. I'll stand up. There's one spot where you can stand in the mezz that's really, like, discreet. And I was just like, Michael Bennett and Hal Prince and Stephen Sondheim just stood here watching Follies. You know, I mean, there's tons of shows that have happened
after
in the Winter, but I only care about Follies.
After Night. Oh,
incredible.
My God, Funny Girl.
Exactly. No, so much. So much. The original West Side.
I have a question, and we can edit this out if you want.
Sure.
But question about Final Bow.
What about it?
Beetlejuice does not get Final Bow.
Yeah.
Is that a controversial thing, or is that...
No, I think it's...
What is it?
I mean, Lydia, I think, is the lead of the show. It is her story that's being told, and I'm really a secondary character in it, I think. You know, I mean,
she belts her little butt off.
And, but it really, I mean, in terms of who the story is happening to, you know, she's the protagonist right from the start, and that's what I love about it. It's the same, you know, and I think that's something that's really important to Alex Timbers. I know he did the same thing, you know, sort of with Moulin Rouge, you know what I mean, and sort of made sure that the focus is that this is Satine's story.
Just because it's called Beetlejuice doesn't mean he gets the final bow.
Exactly.
Is that
sure.
I mean,
which is the mold. I mean,
yeah.
The music man, Harold Hill, will bow last. Annie.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's not Hannigan, no matter who you get to do it.
Yeah. No, I think, I don't know, with this, it just made sense to me because I'm also, as an audience member, looking for the emotional through line.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember right from the start when she started singing You're Invisible When You're Sad, and I was like... Wait, what the fuck? You know what I mean? Like, I immediately got, I was just like, but there's something like a child just saying so matter of fact and simply like, you're invisible when you're sad and not pitying herself, that I was so emotionally connected to her immediately that by, you know, we get into Dead Mom, we get into all of these moments where I want her to get what she wants the whole time. And sort of what Beetlejuice wants is like,
what she wants.
You know, is the Carrie Pipperidge of the story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In my mind, it's just like,
and unlike Mrs. Hannigan, I mean, she's the fun part of Annie, but it is Annie's story. So I guess that's the...
Absolutely.
Yeah. I agree with that. That's, God,
but
she's
it,
really delivering.
She is really delivering. And, you know, and I think it, you know, it, there's something really, really, really beautiful about what they've done to the story in general for her character. That really was what grabbed me about it immediately, just reading the script. Because honestly, I don't know if I would have cared that much about it, of even auditioning for it, if it didn't have some kind of emotion. If I had just seen the movie and the play had been sort of emulating that and didn't have that, like, I don't care. You know what I mean? I probably would have even turned down the audition just because it's not... everything if I'm going to do something, I want it to have just one hook of heart, at least, you know. And they added, there's a scene, so it already sort of had that, but they added that scene when she's in the netherworld in the middle of home where her dad comes and finds her. They added that in rehearsal. And I just remember everybody was just like, and I was just like, is this Beetlejuice? Like, what the fuck is happening? Like, and that's, I was like, this is what's going to sell this fucking show. It's like, because everybody's going to know what they're in for, but... There's no way you're not going to emotionally respond to this because everybody's felt this way at some point. Like, everybody has felt and even if you don't, like, she's such a strong woman, Sophia particularly. So and when she's playing this character, that when she does sort of break, all you can see is a little girl.
Yeah.
Mm. And it's suddenly so sad. You know what I mean? I don't know. Did you ever see The Florida Project?
Yes.
Yeah. You know how you just, like, hated that little girl the whole time, and then at the end you're like, I've been hating a child. You know what I mean? Like, you're just like, oh, no, you're just a child. Oh, no, oh, no. That's how I feel, you know, where it's just like you having that kind of duality as a performer is beautiful. And I think she's just a really, really special person to be playing this part. Not that there's other people who won't play it, but there's just something really... Talk about a marriage of a part and a person. I can't imagine any Beetlejuice fan who would see her and just be like, no, that's not right. You know what I mean? Like, she's so unique and special and dark, but stunningly beautiful. You know, it's a perfect, perfect fit for this show. I don't know if it would be the same at all without her, in a way.
Well, where can people find you?
You can find me on the Instagram, at Will Blum. And that's about it. I have a Twitter, but I haven't checked it in years. And it's just me yelling at the C train, I think. So, like...
I use my Twitter pretty much for, like, MTA complaints and USPS complaints.
I've been thinking about getting back on Twitter, but words are scary to me. Words are, like, it takes me an hour and a half just to caption an Instagram picture, and then I delete it and just never post
it anyway.
Yeah, I
just link my Instagram to the Twitter, so it looks like I'm tweeting.
Exactly.
It's just
See, that's what I do with Facebook. I don't use Facebook anymore. I just link my Instagram to Facebook.
I think that's why I use Instagram, because it's the only one that will cross-pollinate.
Here we are. But that's it. Yeah, just Instagram, basically.
And you do coachings? Is that something you want to...
I do. It's more specific. I guess you can DM me, or if you have a way to contact me, you can, or somebody knows, I suppose.
Wait, he says, wait at the stage
his
door.
His address is.
And wait till Alex Brightman comes out, and then ask Alex where
to text Will.
Yeah.
That you're
It's more specific. I guess most of it comes from friends or people I've worked with before, or my agent sometimes will send me some of their clients, but... Yeah, I'd love to. I'm wary to say, like, yeah, contact me, because it's more of, if you have specific material, that's really what I can do. Mm-hmm. It's not so...
Come once a week and we'll...
Yeah. Or if you do, pretend you have an audition or something, you know, and bring material that, I've done a class that I've done twice that I really loved. It was mainly just for friends, you know what I mean? Because I love it, and it helps keep my directing gears greased. But I have been thinking about doing that again, maybe in the spring. We'll see. But I'll let everybody know.
OMG.
On the Instagram. But I do need to do something now that I've sort of gotten to do Beetlejuice and gotten it at let that all of that understudy anxiety sort of go. It's time to start a sort of secondary project while I finish out this year contract, for sure. So
I'm like, what a treat to be able to let it go.
Exactly.
To finally have done it a few times.
Honestly. Because, like I said, there's just nothing inside you that says, like, yeah, you can do this until you do it. So
thank you so much for schlepping down
between
shows.
Thank you, guys. Oh, my gosh. This was fun.
You're a delight. I'm so happy that I got to meet you.
I'm so glad you came. Shakespearean. I'm going to put that on my bio.
But you know what I mean by that? Like, the detail. It's just so Shakespearean. It's the detail work.
Thank you. I love God is in the details. Yeah. It is. You know, that's it. So
she is.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it.
Well, with that.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. In the Room with Stephen and Dana is produced by Stephen Farazee
and Dana Craig. Special thanks to Joel Wagoner for tinkling the ivories on our theme song. Hit him up at joelwagoner.com.
We apologize, and you're welcome. We'd also like to thank Jesse Wiener, Wiener, for our jazzy original music sprinkled throughout each episode.
You can find him at jessewiener.com.
Last but certainly not least, we'd like to thank Kevin Thomas Garcia for taking all of our ridiculous photos. You can find him online at ktgnyc.com.
We are all over the internet on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at In The Room Pod.
Follow us, like us, share us, pimp us out. And don't forget to subscribe to In The Room Podcast. We everywhere, so subscribe. And thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so much.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.